I never really like was in a Japanese environment until I started like working part-time at like restaurants or when I entered university. Even university, it was a very international environment. But like every time I kind of left that bubble, I felt very weird. Like I felt like something was off. But at the same time, being in an international school, I was kind of told to say what I think or like critically think about how to solve a certain issue. That's why the moment that kind of like connected, I was like, I have to do something about it. So I think there is definitely a big effect of like the international school background part.
Welcome to Tokyo Alumni Podcast. This is the first episode of season 8, episode 71. Today, our guest is an entrepreneur and an activist. She was born in Hong Kong, raised in Singapore and Japan, and currently resides in Chile. She's the founder and president of Voice Up Japan, an organization with a vision of a society where anyone can raise their voice in hopes of creating an equitable society where one is not judged by gender, sexuality, nationality, and religion. She is the co-founder and CEO of Wavix, a Chilean-based firm dedicated to the digitization and democratization of the financial industry through the implementation of blockchain and other decentralized ledgers. Currently, she is working in corporate venture capital investments at Kaufman Ventures. Welcome to the podcast, Kazuna, a graduate of CAJ, Christian Academy Japan's class of 2015.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, it's really exciting to be on this podcast.
Happy to have you. Today we'll talk a bit about you know, what you do, your background of being from CAJ, living in Chile, and a little bit about maybe you can help explain to everyone how this whole, you know, decentralization of finance works, because I think a lot of people hear about Bitcoin, but not many people know what exactly it entails. So first, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do?
Yeah, so I think you did give a good like sum up of what I do, but I am an entrepreneur and an activist. I specifically focus my activism on gender equality rights and LGBTQIA rights in Japan. And in terms of entrepreneurship, I have a brand in Japan called Tidal Group, where I kind of focus on different types of sustainable items. And here in Chile, I have a company called Wavix, and we develop blockchain-based systems in order to digitalize and kind of tokenize different types of assets. And I hope to get into that a bit more later. But yeah, that's kind of a bit of what I do.
So what brought you to Chile?
My exchange. Because my third year in university, I kind of wanted to go somewhere that no one usually goes to, you know? And then I was like, why not Chile? And here I am now.
Wow. And I mean, I think a lot of people do get into entrepreneurship, you know, later on in their career. You went into it headfirst at a really young age. So what sort of drove you towards, you know, starting your own projects as opposed to joining a company early in your career?
I think like being in Japan, I didn't want to do the shukatsu because I knew that I felt like I wouldn't pass any like standardized tests in that way. And then I always kind of wanted to be able to control what I'm doing or kind of be like the boss. You know, I don't really like listening to instructions. That's why when I was a third year in university, no, when I was my, when I was in my second year in university, I decided to start my own organization. Because I was like, if it fails, I can try to look for a job somewhere else. But I was still a student, so I felt like the risk was still a little. And there's a lot I would be able to learn.
And the organization you're talking about is Voice Up?
No, it's another organization I started called Educate For. And we focus on doing different educational programs in Peru. And that was like my first step to kind of like learning about business models, corporate emails, you know, all of that entrepreneurship world.
Wow. So you started that pretty early. And then later on, you start Voice Up. Can you tell us a little bit about Voice Up and, you know, how it started?
Yeah. So in 2019, I started a petition because a Japanese tabloid magazine kind of, they released this ranking of girls that are like easy to have sex with. And they have this ranking of universities, five specific universities. And I just thought it was unacceptable. That's why I decided to do a petition, because, like, you know, growing up in CAJ, we're kind of forced to do like social activity. So I knew that like change.org existed. I knew my friends that always like shared petitions. So I was like, it wasn't a big deal. And then when I started that petition, it kind of blew up. And then there I was like, I didn't want to kind of lose that momentum. And I was really passionate about what was happening. That's why I decided to start Voice of Japan. And yeah, it's our third year this year, and it's very exciting.
Being, you know, from this international background, do you feel like that has affected, you know, sort of your perception and perspective in regards to sort of gender equity? I know you guys also look at, you know, race and religion, but I think right now we just focus on gender in Japan.
I think definitely yes, because I never really like was in a Japanese environment until I started like working part-time at like restaurants or when I entered university. Even university was a very international environment, but like every time I kind of left that bubble, I felt very weird. Like I felt like something was off, but at the same time, being in an international school, I was kind of told to say what I think or like critically think about how to solve a certain issue. That's why the moment that kind of like connected, I was like, I have to do something about it. So I think there is definitely a big effect of like the international school background part.
And so you graduated CAJ in 2015. Can you tell me a little bit about, you are a CAJ lifer. So can you tell me a little bit about how that background has affected who you are today?
I think it affected me a lot because like, well, this part might not be just like CAJ, but one part is in CAJ, you can do a lot of extracurricular activities, which kind of allows me to like do everything I want to do. And it's like, you know, if you go to a normal Japanese school, you can only do one thing, you know, one extracurricular. No matter how good you are at time management, you can only do one thing. But in CAJ, I was able to do everything. I actually graduated with the most extracurriculars, but because I just loved doing everything, and you're like allowed to do it as long as you can manage your time well. And I think that's something that has impacted me a lot. And what else? Sometimes we give like biblical reference jokes. That's the thing that sometimes happens if you grow up in CAJ. Like there's like Christian jokes that you grow up with.
It's very specific.
It's very specific.
Do you feel like the community in CAJ is kind of different from the communities at other international schools?
Yes, but no. Like, I feel like the no comes from the fact that right now more international schools kind of spend time together, you know? Mm. Like, I think my whole, like my first like 10 years in CAJ, I was like in the CAJ community. So it was very different. But at the same time, when you enter high school, you meet more people. So then that whole kind of environment changes. But definitely like being in CAJ, it's different because even in Tokyo, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere. We're very far from all the other international schools. And I think the big part that CAJ does have a very Christian kind of background. And for example, a lot of my friends' parents were missionaries. So sometimes it's like, we wanted to go on a trip, but the parents would be like, no, boys and girls can't sleep together. And we would be like, okay. So, you know, like a part of me feels like I couldn't have that full experience because we couldn't have prom.
Oh,
prom was illegal because it was apparently, well, dancing was also like prohibited for a while.
Wow.
In our school. Well, actually until like, I'm not sure if it's like allowed now, but yeah. So it was like, it was like international school, but very conservative.
Mm-hmm. I think that kind of might tie into earlier we were talking about gender, but you guys also, you know, are strong proponents at Voice Up for sexual minorities, like, you know, people who are part of the LGBTQ, you know, plus community. Was there sort of a part of you that I imagine at a school like CAJ, you know, with Christian ethos, there probably was a sentiment of, you know, not accepting people of that type of sexual orientation. What was that like in high school? Was that overt or was it sort of subvert?
No, that was definitely the case. I mean, for example, I think my senior year, it was right when Trump announced his presidency, you know? And then there you can really see how some people were actually inclining towards voting for Donald Trump because of his views against like same-sex marriage, abortion. And until a certain point in my life, I did grow up religious. That's why back then I myself did have the same values. I was against same-sex marriage. I was against abortion just because I was in that environment where that was kind of like the only choice or like truth I was told. And then I feel like after graduating, I had some friends that came up to me and like came out to me about their sexuality. And then I really felt like shamed that I thought that way when I was in high school. And I realized how much that environment was kind of oppressive. I mean, people did make jokes about like someone being gay, and there was a very toxic environment. And I realized that a lot of friends weren't able to like come out just because they couldn't risk being in that toxic environment.
Yeah. And it's definitely, I mean, I know you're a bit younger than me, but I feel like the younger and more recent generations are definitely more open-minded. So, I mean, I graduated 2005 ASIJ. And I mean, to my understanding now, some people come out in high school, which is definitely a difference. But I know at least my 4 years there, no one was openly gay. And everyone who came out basically came out as soon as they graduated, which, you know, it's kind of ironic because we're sort of meant to be this liberal, you know, progressive school. yet, at least in the 2000s, it definitely was not a welcoming environment to people, you know, who are part of sexual minorities. So right now you're in Chile, and obviously living in Latin America, Spanish is needed to survive. Was this all part of the plan from the time you were in high school, college, to go to Spanish-speaking country?
Not at all. I mean, I started speaking, like taking Spanish class because in sophomore year, you know, in international schools, you have to take two consecutive years of languages. And I didn't really have a choice. It was like Spanish or French or Japanese. And I really didn't care. So I was like, Spanish. Like there was no reason behind me taking Spanish. It could have been French.
Wow. So that was quite fortunate
Yeah.
You ended up living in Chile. I'm sure your Spanish teacher is probably pretty surprised.
I think she's proud. I know that my university professor is very proud.
When it comes to language acquisition, so, you know, you'd be a trilingual. Does that, you know, I feel like I've tried to learn a third language and I kind of use it as an excuse that I never really learned a third language until my 20s. So I'm not very well equipped at it. So as you learn Spanish, do you learn it like in English or do you learn it in Japanese or is it like a hybrid?
I started learning it only in English. And then, when I started learning Spanish, I would be translating everything from English to Spanish. And then at one point I had to start learning Spanish in Spanish without using, I never really used Japanese to learn languages, but yeah. It was like, at one point I had to switch because then a lot of people told me that it was very, it was obvious that I was translating everything in my head. So that's when I really started to change how to think and how to speak. And then it just kind of became a norm.
And right now, what is your level in Spanish?
I would say I'm fluent. I don't need any help right now to be in meetings. I can read anything, listen to anything, watch anything, translate.
So, you know, in your work, you work with blockchain technology, you know, the so-called cryptocurrency. So can you actually first briefly explain what is crypto and then maybe explain to us why this whole decentralization of finance sort of, you know, connects to the work you do?
So cryptocurrency, I think it's really important to kind of like differentiate what cryptocurrency is and blockchain is, because I feel like a lot of people kind of just think it's the same thing. Because to kind of enter the other way around, blockchain is a type of technology. It's a type of decentralized technology. And in other words, people use the word like distributed ledger technology, which is basically a system to take like registry of what is happening. But instead of having a centralized system, like a lot of modern day technology does, it uses the system itself is decentralized. That's why every time a transaction happens, the transaction is noted in all of the nodes. That is usually all of the computers. That's why it's very hard to kind of reverse or hack into the system. Because if you want to hack into one system, you have to hack into all of the systems. Because every time something, a transaction is like added, it's confirmed between all of these nodes. And basically, cryptocurrency is a type of virtual currency that uses blockchain technology. Because, for example, a bank is very centralized, you know, everything is like kind of the bank knows what's happening. But decentralized technology is kind of just, you kind of take away the middleman and everyone's able to do peer-to-peer kind of transactions.
So in regards to, you know, why do people want decentralized systems? What's the advantage?
So the biggest advantage at this moment is the safety, I would say. Because, for example, the big part of implementing blockchain technology is the whole concept of smart contracts. And smart contracts are usually kind of, you know, in a normal contract, you would put the conditions, the terms and conditions of what the contract entitles in a written form, right? What digital or like smart contracts are able to do is they're able to use like cryptography to encrypt all of these terms and conditions, but in a way that it can execute certain things automatically. For example, if in a smart contract, if it says that I am not able to sell this token for a year, the system won't let me because it would be in the smart contract. And plus, I can't try to reverse it or change the terms without people noticing, because it has to be registered in this distributed system.
The where you work at Kaufman, can you explain to us a bit about that sort of structure? And
so Kaufman Group is one of the biggest kind of automotive groups. They represent the Daimler Group, so Mercedes-Benz here in Latin America, specifically in Chile and Peru and some countries in Central America. And they own this company builder and corporate venture capital, which is focused on either creating or investing in mobility related startups. So for example, we have a project called Auto, that's spelled with a W, which is like a car sharing app. Like you can just open your app, rent a car and drive it, leave it, you know, and pay by the minute.
Interesting. So you have this, so that's sort of one of the many things you do. I guess what I'm curious about your sort of day to day as a young entrepreneur is you don't have a set schedule like most people do. Right. It seems to be different by the day. So how do you structure your daily and weekly routine? And also, is there sort of an end game? Is there something that you want to eventually build up to, you know, in a few years from now, decades from now?
So in terms of my day to day, I usually try to wake up at the same time, because usually in the morning at around 7, I have meetings with Japan for Voice of Japan. And then I kind of start my day like that. And then I would go to all the meetings I have to in the morning. And then when I get to kind of breathe there, I would usually make a cup of coffee or kind of do my morning routine. And then because usually, yeah, every day I have a certain number of meetings in the morning. It's all different meetings, but usually I have a meeting every morning. And then it's usually wake up, meeting, work, coffee, breakfast, shower, go back to work. Oh no, yeah. And then in terms of kind of goals, I do hope to have an exit with a startup, whether it be Wavix or whether it be another project in the future, to have an exit to be able to start my own kind of VC fund and hopefully a philanthropy fund as well, to kind of fund young, to be able to fund young activists and young organizations while investing in ambitious founders.
So these various startups that you either contribute to or you're part of, you know, there's this general theme of basically trying to make the world a better place, right? In a variety of forms, whether it's a more equitable society or, you know, just not depleting our natural resources. Do you feel like ultimately you're going to land sort of in one area though, like whether it's sustainable development or is it gender equality? Is there sort of a direction that you're leaning towards right now? Or are you sort of just doing everything right now?
I think the way I kind of want to go is to like, I am interested in going into politics at one point, but even so, I don't see myself like kind of dedicating my whole life. I kind of see myself like being in politics for however long the term is, and then going back to starting a new project. Because at the same time, I think a lot of these projects kind of have like, they have an exit or they get acquired, or I can, and I think I'm totally capable to have a startup running without being, you know, actively a CEO. Like, I think once it gets to a certain point, I can probably go become a director and start on a bigger, on another project. And hopefully in the end, all of these projects are able to help each other and kind of, I can start a bigger ecosystem of helping nonprofit and for-profit entities to, yeah, make the world a better place. Rather, like, whether it be for sustainable development or gender equality or animal rights, like,
That's really interesting.
An accelerated system. Yeah.
That's really interesting. You mentioned politics. When you say politics, are you talking about like politicians, like in Japan, like running for?
Yeah. I'm not sure when, but that is definitely one thing I would want to dedicate my life. Sometimes I don't really feel Japanese enough, but at the same time, it is where my family is. It is where I'm from. That's why I do hope to, you know, because I do like managing projects. I do like looking at budgets. I think I do like things that politicians do. I do like speaking to people. I do like trying to make meaningful arguments. And if I'm able to really change it from the inside, I think that would help me understand how the world works more, and it would give me more like abilities to really change it from the outside.
Yeah, that's really cool that they definitely do need stronger leadership in Japan. I'm sure you were following the recent elections in Tokyo. There was, it was interesting that, the Liberal Democratic Party, they ran 15% women to 85% men. And they were just demolished. So, I mean, obviously that was just one reason why, but it was interesting to see. Then you had other parties that had either majority women or like half women do quite well. Mm-hmm. So definitely, I think changes are happening. It's just, it's incremental, right? Sometimes it's kind of frustrating how incremental it is, but it seems to always be.
Yeah.
At the very end of the podcast, I like to ask the guest I know we just kind of talked about it, but and I don't mean to be redundant, but you know, what's coming up in your life in the next few years, the next few decades, the next half a century? I know they say this generation is going to live 100 years, right? So got quite a few years ahead of you. So can you tell us what is to come?
I think right now for me, it's just like a moment of growth. So I just want to keep learning, and I do hope to either get my MBA or my go to law school or both sometime before I turn 30. And then from there, kind of go find my next, like my next journey. But yeah, I hope I have an exit before I go to law school or get my MBA. That is my ambitious goal for the moment.
Awesome. So, you know, it's nice having you today, all the way from Chile. So it's probably farthest away, I think, from Tokyo, where I'm currently residing, or I'm not at my usual place. And it was nice talking to you, and hopefully I'll talk to you again sometime for the business competition.
Yes, very excited to see young, ambitious entrepreneurs.
All right, thank you, cousin. Have a nice day. Goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you.